Thanks for calling Toyota. This is Jan.
I just adopted a new best friend, and I'm looking for a Toyota so we can make the most out of summer.
With a new RAV4, you can take your pup for a drive up the coast. You can take a Prius to the park, or you can take a Tundra to kayak at a remote lake.
One problem, Jan.
Oh?
My new best friend's a cat.
Your summer starts here, but it all ends June 3rd. Toyota, let's go places. Dealer inventory may vary. See your participating Toyota dealer for details.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Keeping It 1000 podcast is presented with limited commercial interruption. Thanks to our presenting sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. We're on to the divisional round for the NFL playoffs, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, you can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins. Not a new customer, you can still get in on the action of the divisional round with same game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your funds whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win 280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code DNVR for 56-1 odds. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. What is up, everybody, and welcome into the Keeping It 1000 podcast presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Use promo code DNVR whenever you sign up and start gambling with us. I am joined today. I got a very special show I'm very excited about. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, legendary Denver Nuggets coach, George Karl. Coach, it's good to see you.
Good to be here, Adam. Did the win last night. You got a little bit lucky.
Well, I didn't really. I actually agree. I got lucky because I knew we were doing the show today, and I wanted us to have something great to lead in, and we were blessed with something fantastic to talk about and to help us join. Not just one legend today in Coach Karl. I got another Denver sports radio talk icon. Been doing this for over 40 years here in Denver. Been talking on The Fan, one of the most recognizable voices in all of Denver sports media, Mr. Sandy Clough. Sandy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Adam. Good to be with you, too.
So, you're the best.
So let's get right into this, because this wasn't on the docket. When I was outlining notes, I mentioned the game, and we'll get into some bigger picture stuff, but we have to talk about last night. It was not a beautiful game. I know Coach Karl is going to have some critiques about certain aspects of it, because there were aspects of this game that were very ugly. But the thing we're going to remember a week from now, a year from now, and maybe a decade from now, was the heroic effort of Nikola Jokic when he went into takeover mode in that second half. Sandy, we've watched a lot of games from Jokic now over 7 years. To me, this one was right up there with the best of his performances in the regular season. What was your takeaway in watching him when he put his foot on the gas pedal and said, I'm taking over this game in that second half? What was going through your mind?
What was going through my mind is 3 years ago, he wouldn't have done this.
That's great.
I'm not sure pre-bubble he would have been that assertive, but he did what he had to do. And the pass he made at the end of the game, I mean, we get so used to his making passes of that nature that I think we sort of take him for granted, and we shouldn't take that one for granted. And of course, that was the assist that gave him the triple-double for the night. But the way he took over the game in the last 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, was just an example that although the Nuggets as a team aren't exactly entertaining us this year on a night in, night out basis, he's worth the price of admission by himself.
I love that. And I love what you said about he wouldn't have done this 3 years ago, because I think it's right around 3 years ago is when this switch has flipped in him. And I actually trace it back to an exact date. It was December 4th, I think, 2019. If you recall, he came into the season a little overweight. This is about three seasons ago. It had a couple photos from Media Day. Didn't look so great. They play the Lakers, and Anthony Davis just steals his lunch money, just completely dominates him in that game. And I thought there was a moment from that moment on for the rest of the year. He lost a ton of weight. Of course, the pandemic hit, and then the bubble arrives. But in the course of from December 4th all the way until the following fall, there just seemed to be a switch in him where he got hungry and for whatever reason, just started to become more aggressive. Coach, do you see, I mean, is last night the culmination of a years long process of Jokic learning how to be aggressive? And to be honest, he kind of had a little bit of an FU attitude, even to his teammates at a certain point in that third quarter of, I'm just going to take over. Is this the culmination of a long process for 3 years?
I lost you there a little, Adam, but I think you're just asking me to talk about what happened last night. You know, the thing I got to talk about is I've been watching this guy play for 3 years, and I still don't know if I played him tomorrow how I would cover him. I really do not know. You know, coaches call me up and go, what do you think you should do against Jokic? I don't have a good answer. I still think you got to double them some, but you can't double them all the time. Last night he got the foul calls that he normally doesn't get. And I think in a lot of ways the Nuggets were lucky to win that game.
Sure.
But his last 5 minutes of that game, I saw moves I haven't seen before. I've seen the slow 1-2 and the quick bust and long stretched out reach for the rim. Last night he played more athletic than I've seen him play before.
Love that.
And, he looked like he had a little more professional pride and grit that was kind of contagious. I thought it was an impressive performance. And as Sandy said, I've said it now for 2 years how blessed we are to have him in our presence, watching a guy that's going to, I think, go down as a, maybe top 10 player of all time.
And Sandy, one of the things George just mentioned, how do you cover him? I think one of the traits of Jokic that maybe gets under-discussed, he figures teams out and he figures players out. And I think part of this, like Rudy Gobert is a great player. Jokic has played against him 25 times in his career now. I think that's an equation he solved, and now there's nothing else that they can do. Last night, this was the third time playing the Clippers in 1 month. Last night felt like they threw a lot of the same stuff. There was frustrating moments. Nuggets fall behind. But then he's like, I know what to do. And he just started attacking, using that athleticism, to George's point. To me, that's problem solving is one of the defining traits of Jokic.
And it sort of worked last week when they double teamed him in Los Angeles. Same team, the Clippers. George and I talked after that game. George was terrific in breaking down how the Nuggets broke down or really melted down that night. And it was like he absorbed all the lessons from that night. And
right. The
next time they play the Clippers, a week later, he's got the answers on the offensive end. And I thought that the defensive end was a little more mixed. And actually,
though
Zubat scored a lot of points, they were garbage points around the basket. Jokic was switching. They're trying to, I think, preserve him for the minutes they're playing him and preserve him a little bit on the defensive end of the floor. And maybe they sacrifice a little bit, because I do think he's improved defensively.
Right.
But last night, I mean, the last play, they doubled, maybe even triple teamed him, and he finds a guy that's unfindable
right
on the other side of the floor. And, of course, Gordon has to make the shot. But, Gordon was making three-pointers last night.
Right. Yep.
You don't see passes like that from anybody else. And in terms of the all-time stuff, I just think the greatest thing you can say about Jokic is that he's unique.
Yes.
I don't know that he's better than Kareem or
right. Certainly
not Wilt. Russell, a totally different kind of player, the great centers. But none of those guys played like him. You can't compare him with any other center who's ever played. Walton, in certain aspects, maybe, but I think even Walton himself concedes that he's a better passer. And that was Walton's strength.
He plays like a guard.
Yeah.
He plays like a guard. He plays with the jab step. He plays facing. Yeah, he has a post-up game. But his instincts are very much a guard-orientated player. Head is always up. A slow dribble. His shoulders are always square to the basket. And then, you know, his 1-2s last night were dynamic. I mean, he stepped through guys and got three-point plays. And everybody knew what was going to happen. And I actually thought it was kind of funny. I don't know if you guys recognize. I thought Malone was playing the old Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Terry play at the end of the game. The two-man game on the right side of the floor with three shooters on the left side of the floor. And they ran that, what, 6-7 times in a row?
Maybe more.
And, it was good. I felt good about it because, you know, we beat that team 1 year in the playoffs, but that play was hard to cover.
Right.
Really hard to cover when you have two guys. And I could see them going back to that when Jamal comes back. I think that's going to be a little bit of a bread and butter play for the Nuggets.
Yeah. Well, going back to Sandy's point here, you know, so many people like to do the comparisons, as you were mentioning, Kareem and Tim Duncan and this or that. And I always push those to the side because I just don't look at basketball that way. The compliment that he has received that is most impressive to me, Greg Popovich clearly loves Nikola Jokic. But this last time when he raved about him, he called him interesting. He said he's such an interesting player. And to me, that's the best way to describe him is, I don't care. Is he better than this guy? Is he better than that guy? Like, we'll let the cards fall where they fall at the end of his career. But, man, is he interesting, because he just is changing and inventing new ways to play the game. And to me, as a person who just loves the game of basketball, I love learning something new about the game I didn't even think of before in my life. That's what's so impressive. You mentioned another part here, though, George. I think Jokic is getting better. And last night was a game where I feel like Jokic got better out of necessity. The only way they were going to win that game is if he left his comfort zone for about 25 straight minutes and just put his head down and went to the basket. And to me, that is how you get better, Sandy. What do you think about just this season and how he's had to push through to expand his game?
Well, he's had to fight through a lot of frustration this year. And you can see that sometimes in the body language. And the only flaw that I can ever find with him is the interaction with the officials. And I think he has to cut back on that. But you know what? They complained, or Aaron Gordon did it the other day, about his only getting 3 free throws the other night. And last night he got 16. You know, George and I have talked about this a lot over the years. Officials read the papers when they get wind of stuff like this. And last night, Jokic gets fouled a lot, but maybe doesn't get calls when he's fouled in the act of shooting as much. And last night, I thought there were a couple of times, including that play at the end, remember when he and Zubac got tangled up? He went to the basket, laid it in. I didn't see any foul, but there might have been one before he had the ball, and that worked out great for the Nuggets. By the end of the game, that was maybe the key play apart from the last one. So I see him off the court finding ways to make himself better. He's a better defensive player this year, and it reminds me a little bit George especially would remember this, with Bird, Magic, to an extent with Jordan. In the offseason, they'd always find something they could work on, a part of their game that they could strengthen. And inevitably, they always did. And when I was growing up and was watching Wilt, Wilt would try to be the best, but on everybody else's terms. If they said, Wilt, pass, for example, so I'm going to lead the league in assists. And then when he did that, they said, well, Wilt's getting older. He can't score the way he once did. And he'd go out and have a 50-point game. And the teams he was on, the Laker teams he was on, were usually quite good. So they usually won when he did that. But Jokic doesn't do that.
Right.
Because there isn't any hole, even free throw shooting.
Right.
In Jokic's game. And we're complaining that he's not an 80% foul shooter this year. He's down to, what, 75, 76%?
Something like that, yeah. But climbing.
He doesn't miss many when it matters. And last night, he had to be tired at the end of the game. What, he missed one free throw?
Right.
All night?
Would have been 50 if with that. I think he might have missed two, but he missed the technical free throw, which would have been 50.
Right. That's right.
George, why did he get so many foul free throws last night? Was it Aaron Gordon's influence saying something? Was it him just being so aggressive with his head down? Why did he get so many last night?
He's being guarded by a young kid that they can't cover him.
Okay.
And they didn't have another option. Their other option was Stanley Johnson, which I kind of thought was interesting how they went there.
Right.
And I've actually said that maybe Small is the way to go on him.
With take a away big help.
And then dig back in on him, and hopefully they don't make the three. One, there's another insight about last night's game. I don't know if you know, but Philadelphia and their center scores 50. And my assistant coach that I brought in the league, Jesse Murmurs, is coaching that game. So I'm watching that game. And then I turn home and I watch Jokic. And very seldom do I ever watch only one game at a time. But because Jesse was coaching, I was watching him, and I went, compare notes with him today. And then I get Jokic. And anybody that watched both those games knows who's the better basketball player. They know who's the better basketball player. The guy in Philadelphia, it's spinning. It's all about spin. His attitude isn't good enough. He's too selfish. He's too individualistic. He doesn't do the little things that win games, and he doesn't build team effort. And then you watch Jokic, and he gets the same amount of numbers. His team is, struggling to win a game, and he finds a way that we had never seen before to win a game. I mean, all the stuff we're saying, unique, interesting, special. The only thing I worry about is his legacy now is greatness.
Right. Yep.
And greatness has to have a championship. And I think someone in his camp has got to say that to him someday soon. And that's what bothers me a little bit about the Nuggets, is they got to swing for the fences. And Brent Forbes is not swinging for the fences. It isn't. I'm just telling you, it isn't. I mean, it might be for next year when Murray and Porter Jr. come back, then they have a great shooting team. But I don't think this guy's going to pull them out of their three-point problems that they have right now.
Did you want to comment on that, Sandy? Just the idea. I mean, first of all, the Bryn Forbes, I don't think is their move. You're right. That was, but none, the question I guess I would throw to you, Sandy, is do you feel like the Nuggets are moving in a direction towards winning a championship? Obviously they're trying to hold and wait right now for these injuries, but that aside, just the roster they put together, is that moving towards a championship or not enough in your mind?
I agree with George. I may be a little stronger at times, a little weaker at times than George. George is always consistent and concise. I'm not thrilled with the construct of the team. Jokic would average 4 or 5 more assists a game if they could shoot.
Right.
And Forbes, in a limited way, catch and shoot, three-point shooter.
Right.
He's one of the 5 or 6 best. That's fine. He can't guard any of the three of us.
Right.
And he really doesn't do anything else. So he's strictly a catch and shoot 3-point guy. Jokic will capitalize on that skill will make him available for those shots. But my deal, and again, I'm certainly not a doctor, but just from a common sense perspective, it makes no sense to me if you can't get at least 20 games out of Murray and or Porter. It makes no sense to me to bring them back this year. The risk far outweighs the benefit.
Interesting.
They're not a championship team this year. They're a sixth place team, maybe a fifth place team, but they could also be a seventh place team. I mean, I put their chances of overtaking Dallas, at least from now, the team right ahead of them, about the same as I do of Minnesota passing Denver. Now, the big thing there is you want to stay out of the play-in tournament. So finishing right, fifth or sixth is much more conducive to some kind of run in the playoffs than finishing seventh would be. Seventh basically gives you no shot, because even if you get in, you're going up against Phoenix or Golden State, and you're not going to beat any one of those two teams, either one of those two teams, in a best of seven series. But I really wonder, even about next year, my idea would be, if it were me given their situation, I just think as an observer, you load up for next year.
Okay.
You get Murray and Porter to the point where they can work out fully in the offseason, get them ready for next year. They're starting the year at 100%. And, you know, they're sort of tight to the cap, and unless they want to get into luxury tax land, and I know George may have some thoughts on that, whether that would be good or bad, but that's part of swinging for the fences, I think. And I agree with George philosophically. They need to make a move of some significance. And to me, they're spinning their wheels now, or even playing Campazzo's energy is great. But again, that's all he brings on a consistent basis. You know, you're right, getting energy. You're certainly not getting shooting. Austin right, Rivers, to me, and I think George and I might disagree with a little bit on this. I just don't understand the value, and I see all the holes. And so why they're keeping people who really are no use to them is a little mystifying to me. But maybe Cousins helps in that regard, and maybe Bryn Forbes helps a little bit. I mean, the bench can't get any worse than it is right now. And it's right, it's absurd that when Jokic is in the game, they're, you know, probably one of the five, six, seven best teams in the league. But when he's not, they're the worst. They're the worst. You get, that's not a championship concept.
Right, right.
George,
the part, hold on, George, because the part I'm really curious is Sandy is suggesting that this season almost feels like a lost cause. The pushback, and I know you're a competitor. I know you've said you have Jokic, you owe it to him to always try to win the championship every year, no matter the circumstances. But here's my thought, because I agree. I have a hard time talking myself into the Nuggets winning a title this year. It's just hard to see. But I look around the league, and I'm pretty unimpressed. Even more so when you thought the Warriors, I thought I was very impressed with the Warriors. Well, now we know Draymond Green has a herniated disc in his back. That's not a small injury. That team might be handicapped. Kevin Durant's out for 6 weeks. That's not a small injury. That change, that's another contender. So I look at it and I say, yes, the Nuggets, it's hard to talk yourself into it, but you have Jokic, and all these other teams are just one slight injury away from falling into where Denver is. George, is this a year that you would agree with Sandy, and maybe Denver should be preparing for next season and using this year to do that?
I would say 90%, maybe 80% of me is with Sandy. There is a window from a standpoint of, I think the journey of winning four playoff series is with two guys coming back that didn't have the whole year. They might have more energy, but their injuries are both difficult. I think Murray is a two-year injury. The back, the back could go out next week. You know, I mean, it's a hard one. So, yeah. But I'm also watching last night. I'm going, I mean, this guy, you know, after what I saw last night, he could be a top 10 player ever. And I mean, that legacy needs a championship, and the management's got to recognize that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Giannis won one last year. If Giannis didn't win last year, I thought he'd be a little bit closer to getting out of Milwaukee.
Mm.
And I think Denver is in the same position, even though Jokic says all the right things. And I really believe he loves it here.
Yeah.
But, hey, he can live here the rest of his life. But he might have to go somewhere else to win a championship. And I don't see the Nuggets doing anything. I mean, the one area that I worry about, I'm thinking about last night. I mean, I was all over last night. Jokic is now your second or third best defender. You think about that. He is now a good defender. Aaron Gordon is probably better. And there might be one guard they throw out there once in a while that gives you a little bit of a defensive mentality. But why so much offense?
Right.
Why are we going after so much guys that need to shoot the ball all the time? Is what I'd be sitting in the meeting going, we don't need any more offense. We need good basketball players and guys that make each other better, playmakers, guys that have a defensive balance to their personality. We just have a lot of schizo out there some nights. And the numbers, holy hell, the numbers are so bad. I mean, some nights it's a minus 30. God, you can't, I mean, it's unbelievable. I've never seen the numbers this high, except with Oklahoma City or Orlando or somebody like that. I mean, the number and discrepancy in the bench, and you got a lot of guys pulling three-point shots that I think.
Oh, George, did we lose you somehow? Can you hear him, Sandy?
No.
Okay, yeah. I think your mic must have cut out there for a second, George. We'll give you a second to try to solve whatever it is. Going, you know, there's a lot there. There's a kind of a lot to get to out of that. You know, they did make a decision last night. It's interesting contrasting last night's game, Sandy, to the one that happened last week, which was last week when they lost and they blew a 25-point lead. Bones Highland was benched in that game in the second half, and he had a really bad first half.
Yeah,
and he was benched. Last night, Facu Campazzo had a bad half, and he was benched. And Bones was allowed to play. Now, Bones didn't have a great game by any means. But when we talk about guys that can put pressure in the pick and roll and get to the rim and just have a little bit of more dynamic offense, Bones Highland has that. He's inconsistent. He can be a real anchor. But I thought that was an interesting choice for Michael Malone to go with the youngest player, and it actually paid off. How do you factor in the Facu Bones decision on who to play off the bench?
Well, I would play Bones, and this is to take nothing away from Campazzo's standing as a fine international player,
right.
And I know the Nuggets like him, and Highland makes silly mistakes. At least he wasn't running on the court while the game was still going.
My goodness, man. Can you imagine if that determined the game?
But you can, I think you can live with those ups and downs. And the more he plays with Jokic, the more Highland plays with Jokic, the more he'll grow.
Right.
Now, again, you can't play Jokic with everybody for 48 minutes.
It's so true.
And I understand George's point of view. It's shared by a lot of people I talk to and I respect.
Back. Real quick, Coach, you are back. You're good. We'll
I think
you.
We got George.
Yeah, we got you back.
But I just wanted to say there is a point of view out there very much in line with George's that the Nuggets are wasting an all-time great talent.
Would you have traded? I mean, one of the solutions here is, would you have traded Jamal Murray when he went down? Just saying, hey, we can't afford to waste a season and a half of two playoff runs with Jokic. We love you. We think you're a great player, but we got to maximize and move on now. Would you have done something like that?
I wouldn't have done that. I would have given serious consideration to trading Porter. Before
too late now.
Yeah, the operation, obviously.
Right, too late now. George, everybody wants to know this one, and you know the way it's worked out. I understand DeMarcus Cousins and the Denver Nuggets still have interest, and that there's likely to be he's likely to be brought in at some point, whether it's this week, next, or sometime soon. You have an experience with DeMarcus Cousins. What do you think about the Nuggets bringing him in as reinforcements for even if it's just for a 10-day? We're having some technical. We're gonna have to get to that one. Why don't we take a break, Kale? On the other side, maybe George will have this situated. You can work with him. But first, I'll let you know about our presenting sponsor today. We're on to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, you can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins. Not a new customer, you can still get in on all the action with same game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit, withdraw your cash whenever you want. Hits your bank account very quickly, no waiting days. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win 268 in free bets. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only. New customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Coach, are you back with us?
I am. My phone rings and I get disconnected. You're going to have to figure that one out for me.
I'm going to have to. So everybody wants to know DeMarcus Cousins. I understand that he is still on the Nuggets radar and there's still a good chance that he's going to be joining the team sometime over the next couple weeks. It's obviously volatile. Jokic is here. He's the team star. DeMarcus Cousins, same position. What are the risks, in your opinion, and how great are those risks in bringing DeMarcus Cousins in for reinforcements, even on a 10-day contract?
You're asking me, huh?
I don't think there's anyone more interesting to ask.
I think you're right. I think you're relying upon, all you're wanting to get out of them is help to rest Jokic. It's a big time play.
Right.
Because you could get a win in a playoff series because of Cousins. He's a very talented kid. The chemistry of the locker room, how everybody's connected. Malone says he has a great relationship with him. All that is good. But I still think you got to be aware of the history of his career. And, you know, Adam, you and I, and Sandy, you and I have talked about negative energy. The man brings a negative energy to the game of basketball way too often for anybody to really like it. I don't care what Malone says. You know, Malone didn't have big winning seasons with Cousins. I think they won 29 or 30 games.
Right.
I know.
I think, George, at least for a while, your winning percentage with Cousins was better than Malone's winning percentage with Cousins. And it's clear that Cousins likes Malone and Malone likes Cousins. But again, last year, when it was a choice between McGee and Cousins, they chose McGee and they didn't even play McGee.
Right, right.
It's confusing. But I think if he's on a non-guarantee and you could always walk away from the contract, I think it's a decent play. I think it's a play that I would try. If I was coaching, I'd say, we need to rest Jokic. We need to give him some type of rest. And to be honest with you, if Jokic would get hurt, Cousins can put good numbers on the board. I don't know if they're winning numbers, like Jokic is a winner. Cousins is the guy searching for how to become a winner.
I think if you look at it, the Nuggets have a 6-game road trip coming up. It was a 5-game road trip. It turned into a 6-game with the added Brooklyn Nets game. If you look at that, they go at Detroit, at Brooklyn. Then you go down, you got New Orleans, Milwaukee, Minnesota, Utah again on a back-to-back off of a 6-game road trip. Just a brutal Utah schedule this year, Nuggets playing Utah. they could get, if they signed him at the start of that road trip, he could actually play the entirety of it or at least be available. And when you talk about 6 games in 10 nights, I think it's very smart to rest Jokic one of those games. So if DeMarcus Cousins is true value, is allowing Jokic to take a game off and you still have a chance to win that game, to me, that is the best use of him. But here's my question, and I'll ask Sandy this first, but I want to hear your question, your answer as well, George. Who do you think would receive the most pressure from DeMarcus Cousins joining the team? Would it be Michael Malone? Because now he has to, am I playing him? Am I not playing him? Is it here or there? Is it Nikola Jokic, who all of a sudden has a guy who was his rival a year ago and now is his understudy? Is it somebody else? Who has pressure in that situation?
Well, I guess Malone would. As far as I can tell, Malone is the only coach that DeMarcus Cousins has ever had nice things to say about.
Right.
Including John Calipari, by the way.
Right.
Very much including John Calipari.
Really?
They didn't get along.
I didn't know that.
So I suppose there's pressure on Malone more than there is on Jokic. I mean, Jokic can play with anybody. Yeah. Jokic doesn't get caught up in the other stuff, you know, that goes on behind the scenes, the stuff we talk about. Now, Jokic's going to play the same way. And I would like the idea of resting him for one game on this trip. I just don't know if they have the luxury of doing that at this point. But I could see one. If they ought to get one, maybe even two blowout wins on this trip. And they might get blown out once or twice too. And those are the games where you can cut his minutes way back and quote unquote rest him. But it would be, I agree with George, anybody you can get at this point who might conceivably give you an edge in a playoff game that you wouldn't otherwise have, he's worth taking a shot on.
I think DeMarcus Cousins, you got to give him a minimal role for the first 20 games.
Yeah.
And see what he gives you and see how he reacts. He's kind of on a test. He's got to show not only the coach and the organization, but the locker room and the players in the locker room that he can help. Because they need help. They need a personality off the bench. In a lot of ways, Cousins has become a three-point shooter. And he's a pretty good three-point shooter. So I think that's another – I think one of their weaknesses is their inconsistency from the three ball. So I think the dice roller of bringing him in is – I'm okay with.
It's worth it.
But don't expand it until you're confident it's going to work.
Do you like the 10-day rule, Coach? I mean, I know this has arisen because of the pandemic, but do you like this expansion, the G League, and all of these players that are now available as resources to teams? Do you like that, or do you feel like it's a hindrance?
Well, I mean, the whole thing goes to the COVID situation. Basketball is scrambling to get back to the old time. Get back. I apologize. My dog's not crazy on me. But I bring personality to this show. I think what I haven't liked about the NBA this year is there are guys playing big-time games I never heard of. I don't even know where they're from. And then I go, my son's in the G League, and he's losing games because all his players are now playing in the NBA. And so, you know, it's frustrating, I think, for the G League coaches. COVID is now hitting everybody. It's hitting colleges. It's hitting high schools. And until we figure it out, I think we just got to live with, you know, the situation that we're at hand. And coaches got to learn how to adapt to it.
Right.
And I'm actually kind of tired of always blaming it on COVID or something like that. Everybody has problems right now in figuring out their rotation, who's playing, who isn't playing, how to handle a 7-game road trip. All those things now are more difficult because of COVID and the circumstances around COVID.
One thing that about, there's not a lot of positives from the COVID, you know, era of sports. In the NBA, though, one thing, and this is a good transition, because I want to spend the rest of the show now talking big picture about the evolution of the league and sports in general. Sandy, I know 43 years covering sports on the radio here in Denver, so I want to get that big picture perspective from you. One thing I like about sports, to me, it is about solving problems with your team throughout the course of a season. You figure out who you are, you're tested, you're broken, you're rebuilt, and then you go into the playoffs and you compete. And I feel like the NBA's moved a little bit away from that. The championship is almost won on paper in many ways in terms of, hey, let's put some super teams together. How do I get this guy and this guy? And it doesn't matter what our margin for error is because we're so good now. This season, everybody is facing adversity. This is the old adage, everybody has a game plan until you get punched in the mouth. Just about every team in the NBA this year has been punched in the mouth. And now it's like, who can just figure out a way to win despite that? So if there's one silver lining, I do feel like this is the season of everyone's just being punched right now. Who's the toughest?
Is that yours, Sandy? You're on
I'll take a crack at that one. No, I think it's true, and it's true on all levels. I mean, the college basketball season has been kind of funky. But sometimes in a good way, you know, with top-ranked teams getting knocked off. I mean, Baylor looks invincible, maybe at about this time a week, 10 days ago, whatever. And then they lose two in a row at home. Right. You know, they lose to an unranked team at home. It makes for good conversation because everything is so fluid. But I think you have to be nimble. You have to be agile. You have to be resourceful. You have to look at change as a constant. And I'm afraid of the Nuggets being a little too rigid. I know everybody's struggling with what kind of policy to implement on COVID. And we've seen the time of isolation change, right, to shorten if you're asymptomatic. Now in hockey, I think you, as long as you're asymptomatic, you don't get tested. I think everybody is just searching in the dark for a way to keep it together. And, you know, from a media standpoint, you know, I was lucky, and I hope and I think I knew I was lucky at the time, not only to cover George's teams more recently when the Nuggets were by far the most open organization in town, if not the most successful, by far the most open organization in town compared to the Broncos, the Rockies, and the Avalanche. But back in the 80s, you know, you had access. Right. You'd fly on the same planes. You'd even get Doug loved to take bus rides because Doug didn't like to fly. So when we were in Texas, you know, we'd take a bus from Houston to Dallas, and I would talk with Alex English on the bus for 20-30 minutes. Fat Lever,
right.
You don't have that anymore. Right. And now with the restrictions, which I think most teams actually kind of like,
because
it seals the media off. You can't ask follow-up questions. There's no sidling up to somebody in the locker room and just having a quick 10 or 15 minute conversation. It doesn't even have to be on the game just played or the sport itself. You lose that.
Yep.
And I think for that reason, the journalism on the print side anyway is one of transcribing more than analyzing and offering opinion based on your having talked to these people one-on-one, both on the record, off the record, even for background purposes. And so we get kind of a sanitized view of what is going on. And I think actually teams being held accountable is a really good thing. And it's harder to do now in this day and age than it was even 5 years ago.
The irony of it, Sandy, is as The players seem less authentic in large part because we don't get to see them being their authentic self. To your point, when you're inundated with all of the little things people say and their personalities and this or that, you feel like you get to know them and they're people and you judge them as people. What we are presented now so often is a very planned image of like, hey, here's the player. This is the context for which you can talk to him. We're going to hide him and we're going to try to sell you the story about that player. And I feel the irony of it is, in doing so, in protecting the players' image, the players have actually become more alienated from fans and from media, and they've almost become more criticized in that way because we're trying to peek through. So to me, I feel like it's actually been a negative on that. Coach, I'll throw this one to you. What do you most like? Try to be positive for a second. What do you most like about this era of NBA basketball? I'm going to get into least like here very quickly. I imagine it'll be easier to answer, but first, most like.
I think the league has plateaued a little bit. I thought for 20-some years, maybe 25 years, the league has gone consistently in a good way. But I think COVID has kind of plateaued it. What I really like about the league is I think we're going to expand, and I think Seattle's going to get a team.
Yeah.
And I think that's really exciting to me. I like playoff basketball. I don't like the format that we have getting into the playoffs. I think reseeding the teams after every round would be a lot more exciting for everybody.
Interesting.
And I don't think we should have divisions anymore. I think the best 16 teams
outdated
should make the playoffs.
Yeah. Even conferences then. So even do away. Well, I'll start.
Go away with everything.
Yeah. I'll start with you, Sandy. I'm curious. What do you like most about this era? Like, what the unique factor of it do you really appreciate?
I think the game is faster now than it was certainly when I was growing up. Yeah. And George and I are roughly the same age. So we saw the same things growing up. And I go back on YouTube and watch games sometimes. And I just notice, and it's true with all sports, how fast the games are today on the major professional sports level compared to how slow they were. Certainly, right. Speaking in a relative sense, slow they were back in the day. And George made a point the other night that I hadn't thought of when we were talking after one of the games that, you said when you were coaching here, there might've been five or six other teams that kind of pushed the pace the way you like to do it. And now there might be 20 teams that do that.
I think more.
2/3 of the league, maybe even more than that. Maybe more like 80% of the league does that.
Yeah.
And you have players like Ja Morant, who I think could percolate up every year. Not necessarily out of nowhere, but they go from being good players to stars to being electrifying. And, we get to watch Jokic every night, but Giannis is wonderful. And right. Ja Morant is a revelation, and Steph Curry continues to play at an extraordinarily high level and shoot shots that just weren't ever attempted before, even with a three-pointer in effect, shots that you've never seen before. So I enjoy watching a sport where I can still, on a given night, see something I've never seen before. And that sport is evolving. I couldn't agree more with George on Seattle, by the way. Yeah. It is a joke that the NBA does not have a franchise there, and hopefully there will be one there very soon.
Not just a good sports town, but also a good basketball town. A lot of good players out of Seattle. So
great basketball.
Basketball culture there from the grassroots level all the way up. For me, I like what you said, Sandy, because for me, that's what I like too. We're in the sort of unicorn era in that there's a lot of basketball being discovered. Giannis is a discovery in basketball. I mean, we didn't think there would be a 7-foot, guy that moves like that. Jokic is a discovery in basketball, and there's just a lot of those. And so that's what I really like about it. What do you least like about it, Sandy, the era right now, the way the game is played or something off the court, any of it?
I think the NBA remains the most progressive of the major sports leagues here. But I would like to see a more open environment. We used to do round tables all the time that would involve general managers and coaches. And just from my narrow slice of the world in media covering the NBA, from a talk standpoint, I miss those days.
Yeah.
Tim Connolly is actually very good. I think Michael Malone is good too, but you know, the George Karls and the Doug Moes and the Larry Browns and most all of the coaches, even the less successful ones that I've covered here in Denver with the Nuggets, they were accessible. You could talk to them. And I think the more the league moves away from that, the more they become the NFL. Hockey's been pretty open. Hockey's changed for the worse, too, and that is more closed off. And if it's closed off to us, on some level, it's going to be closed off to the fans, too. And the thing I like least about it is that I think the fan conversation is less nuanced and more of the so-and-so's a hero and so-and-so's a bum, and there's nothing in between.
Almost feels like every team has one good player and a bunch of scapegoats. Is sometimes it's reduced.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
That's simple. George, here's a question I have for you. The last decade has been the decade of super teams, but we've seen a little pushback on this. John Morant, Nikola Jokic, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Damian Lillard. Now, you can question the sincerity of all of those guys and what they've said, but some guys have pushed back and said, hey, winning a championship doesn't mean as much if you have to go and move around to do it, winning it in place here. Do you feel like the era of super teams is maybe dying a little bit and that this new generation views that differently than the LeBron generation does?
I hope so. I hope it gets back to the old, kind of an old school loyalty. I mean, I love Jokic and Giannis wanting to stay in small markets.
Right.
But I think a lot of that has gone that I think the league has realized that there are 50 players that think they're superstars, but there's only really about 15 superstars.
Right.
And so all these max contracts, that doesn't make you a superstar. And it doesn't make you a player that wins in the playoffs. And if you're building a championship, you got to get guys that know how to win in the playoffs. Denver Nuggets, listen to me. Go get players that know how to win in the playoffs. You know, Bones Highland, I love. I think he's going to be really good. But he doesn't even know how to be an NBA player yet.
Right. Let alone the playoffs, yeah. Right.
And, okay, in 2 years or 3 years, he might. But you got to win. You got to build it. It's constructed. There's a purpose and a plan to winning a championship that I want Denver to have, and I really don't think they have it.
I've got two more questions. I know we're running low on time here, Sandy, but they're big ones. I think a lot about how much Denver has changed. And George, in your era, Denver had already begun to change. I mean, this is a transplant city. People have been really immigrating to Denver for quite a while from other cities. But I wonder how much that the rapid change from Denver in the last 20 years has diminished the possibility for Denver to become a Nuggets town the way it was in the 80s and at certain points. Do you feel like maybe it's bad marketing, it's not being on TV? Obviously those things contribute. Or do you feel like this is a city that most people have teams when they move here and they have teams that they keep, and this is a very accommodating city? Do you think there's something to that, that Denver just doesn't have that history because so many of the people haven't been here long enough to have that?
I've been here for a while. I've seen Denver at high points. I've seen Denver at low points. And, you know, I think Carl Scheer always had a great attitude about it because the Nuggets were successful before the Broncos were. The Nuggets were in the ABA finals in the last year of the ABA, as George well remembers. The Broncos hadn't even made the playoffs a single time, and the Nuggets are playing for a championship in an ABA at that point that at least with respect to the top teams, and I'm an old NBA snob, but being out here re-educated me. The Nets and the Nuggets in 76 were better teams than Boston and Phoenix were in 76. The Celtics were getting old. That was probably the weakest of the Celtic championship teams. And they played Phoenix in the finals. I don't even think Phoenix had a winning record during the regular season. The NBA was awful. Doug's talked about this a lot. Doug probably made me a convert. The NBA, when the merger took place, the NBA stunk. Their finals games were on tape delay. The quality of play was bad. It was an old league. It was a slow league. And the shame of it to me at the beginning, at least, started with Dr. J not being able to play the way Dr. J had played in the ABA. And he was still a great player, and you saw flashes of it. But the NBA homogenized everything. But here in Denver, I think Carl Scheer, when the Broncos had their breakthrough year in 77, a lot of the staff complained, hey, they're a flash in the pan. They haven't done anything. We should be more popular. We should – why is KOA Radio prioritizing the Broncos over our games and coverage of our team when we're just as good as they are and we've been better a lot longer? And Carl said, it's their time. We have to let them have their moment.
Interesting.
And I think that was the right approach because the Broncos, even if they're really bad, obviously if they're really good, they're going to be the number one story in town. That doesn't make it any more of a football town or any less of a basketball town. It's a Broncos town. And the Nuggets and Avalanche can get close to that, but I don't think year in and year out they're ever going to be able to match it. You know, I think of the four teams in town, there's no doubt that the Avalanche and Nuggets are a lot closer to being champions than the Broncos and Rockies are. And I think we ought to appreciate that. And I know with our station, we've made a conscious attempt. And I think with George's assistance, it's been successful in shifting our focus, certainly at nights, from strictly Bronco talk to heavy Avalanche Nugget talk coming on immediately after games that have just been played. And as you refer to, games that can't be seen most nights by most people.
And the one thing I'll say about it is I feel like even the Broncos' foothold has lost it a little bit, not just over the last 5 years when they've been down, but you can go to any bar in Denver right now, and it might be an Eagles party. It might be a Cowboys party. It's just the city has changed so much that I feel like that connectivity has changed. But I got to get this one before I get you out of here, Sandy. And that is, I said something a year ago. I was after a playoff game, I'm sure. And I got a lot of pushback from a lot of the original Denver media members, like yourself, Vic Lombardi, some of these guys that have been around for a long time. I said, I think Nikola Jokic has a chance. An outside chance. I'm not saying he's there. But he's great enough that he has a chance to be one of, if not the quintessential Denver sports athlete. Now, there's a lot of career left for him to do that and reach the heights of a Waugh or an Elway or some of these guys. You got to win championships. But the reason I think it's important to bring it up now is I don't want people to be caught off guard if he does win championships with this conversation, because I watch him play and I say, I think he is every bit as good at his craft as a lot of these other guys were, just without the accolades. Do you kind of scoff at that statement, or do you feel like it's within the realm of possibility?
No, I don't scoff at it. I think, you know, listen, We had Elway winning two championships at the end of his career. We had Peyton Manning two of his last 3 years going to Super Bowls, winning a championship in his last year. We had Ray Bourque in his 40s winning his only Stanley Cup here. So we've been spoiled. We've had some great stories. But now we have players in this city like Jokic and McKinnon and McCarr. And these are players we've grown up watching.
Right.
And what a blessing it is. Right. I think that to have, I think of the three, Jokic has the best chance of being an all-timer. Maybe the least chance to win multiple championships, because I think the Avalanche are going to win at least two the way they won two in 96, their first year here, and 5 years later in 2001. But yes, I think Jokic can be on that Mount Rushmore of great athletic performers in the history of this city. Elway is always going to be number one. Manning's 4 years here were magical. Yeah, it was 4 years.
Very special.
Bourque was 2 years. So you can't put Jokic and McKinnon – These guys are in their mid-20s now.
Right.
They've got 8 to 10 more years, assuming good health. And McCarr may have closer to 15 more years. Right. So all these guys can be Hall of Famers. When have we ever been able to say that in the history of Denver sports, that we're in the process of watching several Hall of Famers?
Well, Sandy, you've been around long enough to see a lot of evolutions in Denver sports. And so if anybody would know, it would be you. I thank you so much for taking an hour out of your day to share these insights. I thought this was a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks to both of you.
George, thank you so much. And your dog. So we had another special guest, another legendary guest here. George's, what's the dog's name?
Mocha.
This is Mocha. All right, Mocha. Hey. You're the star of the show today. Thank you, everybody. Don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe to the podcast, and of course, you can catch Sandy over at 104.3 The Fan. Everybody, have a great day. We'll see you next time.